Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, November 14th. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com as well as ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. We've got a great show for you today that's going to include, do MDs over-prescribe tests if they make a profit from them?
And should we be using probiotics to prevent deaths from swine flu rather than the flu shot?
Boy, there's the concept. And the U.S. still lags in quality of health care. We've not improved. We're still ranked number 37 of the world, basically.
And are we getting sick from our disinfected water byproducts?
And we're going to also talk about government-backed expert panels are joining the fight against skin cancer. See what they have to say about that. And, of course, a lot more.
Plus, if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. So, about MDs over-prescribing tests if they profit from them. You know, the journal, the American Medical Association study with Duke shows that if doctors get money or financial reimbursement and they own cardiac imaging equipment, they over-prescribe 50 to 100%. Now, that's no surprise.
It doesn't stop there because, let's face it, medicine is absolutely a business, and it's getting more and more that way. And if you've got a way of making more money, you're probably going to do that because that's how the system works. It's not like it used to be years ago where service was the big deal, where we're really wanting to make sure we gave the best service. And it's not like these tests can't be used. And it's not just the tests that are used by the cardiologist. It's tests used by everybody. I remember when I went into practice back in the early 70s, how I saw certain people kind of lobbing around trying to find how they were going to become the chief of respiratory care or of cardiology or of the ICU or the CCU. And I thought, well, it's really nice that they want to do that, isn't it? Because now they can really add some of their personal spin to it.
Plus they were going to get more business, huh?
Well, that plus the other perks that come with it. So you read the EKGs or the cardiac echoes or you read the pulmonary function test and you get paid for it.
That, huh?
And you get paid for being the chief as well. So there's a lot of conflict of interest that get into who does what.
And most people probably haven't even thought about doctors being paid extra for interpreting them.
No, well, that's right. I mean, the tests have to be done. There's a fee for that. But then they have to be read, too, by somebody that knows what they're doing. I know I remember when I was starting out in practice, we were charging $16 for EKGs. And I remember telling that to the chief of medicine where I had just finished my training. He said, well, that's outrageous. We only charge $10.
What is it now?
Now it's $70 or $80, depending on, you know, or even more, depending on what insurance companies involve.
Of course, the cost of living's gone up, too, in all those years.
Well, a lot of things have changed, but doctors are now involved with buying MRI machines and CT scans and surgery centers and laboratories and special procedure centers.
That sounds like over the top, doesn't it?
Well, it just shows you that, yeah, they're bringing more services in, but they're also doing it in an interesting way where there's profit that comes with it. So, for example, I just recently had an aspiration of a joint because I have a problem with a hip. And normally, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you just go into the office, the doctor would aspirate it, send it off to the lab, and you get your answers back. And now what we do is we go to a special place where they do procedures like that.
It's almost like a hospital in there.
It really is. You come in and they greet you and they take information, and it's a very nice environment. And then a nurse comes and gets you and takes you to a special little room that's your own. And
start an IV.
She starts an IV? Like you're going to need an IV to be able to have a joint aspiration?
And then they asked you if you wanted a general anesthetic.
It's like, what the heck is this? You know, it's a little needle going into the joint. It's not like it's a big deal. And you could use some lidocaine if you want. But an anesthetic? I mean, they offered Versed. And I'm going, I don't think so. Thank you very much. And then I could hear some of the other patients that were there being offered this and saying, oh, yeah, well, what the heck? I could take that. And yet, you're looking at a procedure that could cause complications.
Yeah, so you came out of your procedure and you see all these other people as if they're in a recovery room that are snoring away.
Then I get into the place where they're going to do the procedure. They got these fancy x-ray machines that are like CT scans, and they're tracking where the needle goes so you can see everything that's happening. And it's like, you know, a good orthopedist knows exactly where that joint is. They could just put that needle in and out and would be done in no time. The profit made from that? Tons. Probably $1,000 to $1,500 for that, as opposed to $100 if it's done in the orthopedist's office. And of course, everybody's going along with it. As soon as you talk to the orthopedist and ask him, well, you want to just do the aspiration now? He says, oh, no, we got the system. You really like it. It's comfortable, and you should go get it at this particular center.
It's like going to a spa for your aspiration. I have a friend that when I told her you were going to have that, she says, oh, are you going to go to the money machine?
Yeah, well, that's a lot of what it's about. Now, it's not the only thing, and you have to be grateful for the fact that they treat you so well. But it doesn't require an IV. It doesn't require an intravenous
sedation
or really, it's like the preamble of a general anesthetic. And it doesn't require fancy CT scan machines. So can you get away with not doing that? Of course you could. But do you want to get away with that? I'm not so sure.
The other thing is, too, you know, medicine definitely has become a business. And MDs are vulnerable just like anybody else. And doctors used to probably make more money until the HMOs popped up, and then the doctors ended up working for them. So now aren't they more on a salary kind of thing?
Well, not only on a salary, but they're told what to do because they're employees. I remember back in the early 90s when doctors were selling their practices to our local hospital, and they were getting $300,000 to $500,000 for their practices. And in return, they said that what they would do is let them, for 5 years, continue to run their practices the way they were doing that. But at the end of 5 years, the hospital would own the practice, and they would be an employee of the hospital. And they didn't think much of it, but I did. I thought, well, when that happens, they're going to tell us what we can and can't do. And they're not even our patients. They could actually fire us, and we'd lose our practice.
They become your employer.
Yeah. So and some of the things are one size fits all. And, of course, that's exactly what happened.
I'd rather have my doctor rather than my insurance company telling me what to do to take care of me.
Well, yeah, and even then you have to question your doctor, right? Because a lot of the time they're giving you advice that isn't the right advice.
And all these conflicts of interest. And I was thinking, too, some of these advanced tests lead to more invasive testing.
Well, that's right.
Because sometimes they show you more than what you need to know.
Well, it raises lots of questions, and then you don't know exactly how to reassure your patient. So you say, well, if you really want to know, maybe you have to do this. So say maybe they're doing a cardiac echo that doesn't need to be done after somebody's put a stent in. And a lot of the time we're finding that the docs are doing that just to tell the patients that, yeah, everything is fine. Here, look at this test. Or they're doing some kind of a radioactive scan of the heart to get information about cardiac output and all that business. And that's good to know. You definitely would like to know it. But it's not something that makes any difference at all in morbidity or mortality. So the American College of Cardiology says don't do the test because it's just wasting money. But the docs who own the equipment really convince their patients, well, let's just see how much good we did. So they'll go back and do the test, and they're spending, you know, anywhere from $800 to a couple thousand dollars.
So in other words, let's do it just out of curiosity, not because we're going to treat you any differently.
That's right. So what happens is the patients go along with it. The doctors make it sound like it's a good deal. Everybody's happy. And, of course, they're making money off their tests.
You know, we've talked about things like this with conflicts of interest with doctors and pharmaceutical companies.
So oh,
this
for
is,
sure.
this is different news anyway.
Well, I mean, the most extreme case is the case of the oncologists. I mean, look at the oncologists. They're basically prescribing chemotherapy for their patients, and they make one-third of their income from the sale of the drugs. Talk about a conflict of interest.
It's like taking advantage of people when they're down, you know?
Well, and
it's like when there's a disaster and then all of a sudden they hike up the prices of the water.
Yeah, really?
You know?
Yeah. Well, in this particular case, when they start using drugs, maybe they'll use one that's a newer one that's a lot more expensive, because the ones that have gone off patent are cheap. And all of a sudden they're making a percentage of that because they're marking it up. And if a drug you're paying $10,000 for in a month, which you might, maybe half of that goes to the doc. I mean, hello, you're looking at conflicts of interest that absolutely determine what kind of treatment is given.
But how does the patient know?
They don't.
What I mean? And they love their doctors.
I will tell you that.
I've never talked to a patient that didn't love their oncologist.
No. Well, most people, okay, will follow the advice of their doctor, thinking that it's the right thing to do, because they don't know enough about what's involved with making those decisions to have really much input. But it's too bad, too, because doctors should always explain, if the patients want, why they're doing what they're doing, and offer them alternatives, because there are many different ways to do it. And what they do,
allowing the patient to make a choice and be a partner in the whole thing.
Well, wouldn't it be great if they told them that there were two or three different drugs they could choose from that did about the same thing? And maybe there's a couple of percentage points difference, depending on who did the study. And instead of using the expensive drug, maybe use the one that's less expensive. Of course, if insurance is paying for it, the doctor and the patient don't care much, because they just want to get done what they get done.
And many times people think if it costs more, it means it's better.
Oh, well, not true at all. I mean, and a lot of the time when it costs more, it means it's a drug that's new on the market. That's
been
hyped up.
Tested as much.
No, and you're getting all that from your experience. Not a good idea. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health, or if you want to enter the conversation and put your 2 cents in for the topic that we're discussing, give us a call.
So should we be using probiotics to prevent deaths from swine flu rather than the flu shot?
Isn't that a novel?
You know, that was something we came up with.
Well, I kind of invented that. That's right. It's like, well, how could you make a statement like that, Dr. Len? A probiotic is going to do the same thing as a swine flu vaccine or influenza vaccine? And my answer is absolutely, because let's look at what, particularly in kids. When you look at kids and swine flu deaths, okay, what happens there is that we're treating people with these vaccines to try and prevent the swine flu or influenza from happening. But when a kid gets into the ICU because they're really that sick, the ones that have MRSA, the methicillin-resistant staph infections, they're the ones who are more apt to be dying from it. In fact, 8 times as often will they die from it. On occasion, somebody will die from a pneumonia related to the swine flu itself. But it's these complications that lead to most of the deaths. So,
and yet the headlines in 2009, when all this was such a big deal, they had that children who died from the H1N1 died from that pandemic, and there was no mention then of the MRSA. Maybe they didn't know about the MRSA, but they were saying healthy children died from H1N1 pandemic.
Oh, very few healthy children died in the pandemic.
Well,
it would be a handful of kids.
Well, out of all the kids that died, 70% had underlying health conditions, and 9% died.
Yeah.
And they're calling this a pandemic.
Yeah, well, when you look at the number of healthy kids that died, it's probably 25, less than 25, that you could really be sure of. So there we are.
So it's the combination of the MRSA with the flu, not the flu alone.
Okay.
And what happens is that the flu suppresses your immunity,
mm-hmm.
and so you're more susceptible to it becoming more dangerous when you have this MRSA.
All right. And so the thing about MRSA is it's now out in the community, right? So it's not uncommon to find people carrying it in their nasal passages.
And they don't even know it.
No. And so when they come into the hospital, those kids come into the hospital, and they've got swine flu and they're sick with pneumonia and they're, you know, put into the ICU, they're the ones who are developing the MRSA infections that are so lethal. So I got this idea of why don't we use probiotics on kids during the influenza season or even throughout the year that's given as a nasal mist of some kind.
Yeah, you could probably even make your own.
Well, yeah, we won't want to say how you do that. You could scratch your bottom and pick your nose, I suppose.
No!
I'm not recommending
that. You
could
put a little bit of the powder in a saline.
Yeah, let's make it a process. It's just kind of a funny way to look at it, but, you know, that's the bottom line of what's actually happening.
The bottom line.
Yeah, the bottom line, yeah. So we can get rid of a lot of those MRSA infections that are in the nose by adding probiotics and things that support the normal flora in the nasopharynx. And that would do a lot to get rid of those MRSA bacteria that are being carried without any symptoms in the nasal passages. So now when these kids get a problem with the swine flu, yeah, indeed, they could wind up going to the ICU. But their risk of getting MRSA now is far less. It probably drops to something like 5%, because I'd say 5% of people who come into the hospital without any infection of MRSA or any other kind are going to get it while they're in the hospital. So we have a very novel approach here of what we can use to prevent these MRSA infections from being so lethal. And until we know that the swine flu vaccine actually works, which we do not, those studies have not been done, and until we know that it's absolutely safe, which we absolutely don't know, we've got a real problem here. So I like the idea of doing things that are less invasive. I like the idea of using a probiotic that's a nasal probiotic right through the swine flu season, particularly for kids, because that's what these people are talking about in this study. And then maybe we'll find something that's different. That would be a real novel way to try and prevent swine flu deaths in kids.
I remember when the swine flu was hot in the news and how Dr. Andrew Weil got in trouble because he was recommending a nutritional supplement on his website, and I don't know who it was that got a hold of him. They threatened to shut him down.
Oh, I know. It gets ridiculous.
Because it was something natural. So
exactly.
They really, really want you to get the flu shot. I mean, I even saw in the news last night they're promoting people getting the flu shot that are at those Occupy Wall Street
Oh, isn't that something?
Groups.
Talk about getting things all mixed up. I mean, that...
What did that have to do with anything?
Somebody thinks they're doing a good service because they believe that the swine flu vaccine does something, but I would invite people to go to our website at drsaputo.com and put in the Infection Deception Part 1, and what you'll get is about a 15-page article that I wrote that is well-referenced, that talks about the scandalous way the swine flu vaccine was brought forward.
The infection deception?
Infection deception, exactly right. I mean, it's a terrible thing that all the sly tricks were done by the CDC, the World Health Organization, and even the White House to promote that the vaccine for swine flu is necessary. And it is the furthest thing from the truth that you can get to. And this year, what's happening is that people are just assuming they need it. And so they're going out and just taking it. I won't give them in my office. If somebody wants to have a swine flu vaccine, they can go someplace else and get it. I'm not going to participate in that.
Well, you know, too, when you tell people your opinion, I can feel they just close off. They don't want to hear it.
Well, that's right. Well, time for your 2020 tip. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And if you have questions that you want to tweet us with, you can go to PRN_radio and give us a tweet.
attorneys from the Nutrition Advocacy Group, Center for Science in the Public Interest, they're filing a class action lawsuit on behalf of consumers against the food giant General Mills for selling fruit snacks that contain little or no fruit and that are loaded with refined sugars, trans fats, and artificial colors.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, General Mills has these strawberry fruit roll-ups, and they actually don't even contain strawberries. They're loaded, though, with additives like corn syrup and dried corn syrup and refined sugar and partially hydrogenated cottonseed oil and other kind of chemicals and petroleum-based dyes. And the only fruit-related ingredient in strawberry fruit roll-ups is a little bit of pear concentrate that represents a small fraction of the overall product's content. So that's probably just to be able to say that they have real fruit.
Yeah, right.
Well, similarly, General Mills has another product called Fruit by the Foot strawberry snack.
What? Fruit by the Foot?
Yeah, it's the same thing. They also don't contain any strawberries. And also, when you read fruit flavored or naturally flavored, you always have to beware, because products that have those labels, especially these General Mills fruit rolls and so forth, are just junk food, and they're posing as a health food. And they're just dressing up really cheap candy as if it were fruit, and they're giving consumers the false impression that these products are somehow more wholesome and charging more, and it's just a hoax on parents who are trying to do the right thing for their kids.
Yeah, really.
General Mills also makes a lot of other funny quote-unquote natural products filled with junk food and ingredients. For example, they have this total, listen to this, total blueberry pomegranate cereal.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds like it's total blueberry pomegranate.
Yeah, right.
But it doesn't have any pomegranates or blueberries. And it has many of the same harmful ingredients as those fruit roll-ups and Fruit by the Foot. And they're full of refined sugar and corn syrup and petroleum-based dyes.
Oh,
just like artificial fruit. So their natural cereals are no better than conventional varieties, and they're marketed as if they're the equivalent of organic, and they're often priced and expensive, and they're imposter cereals, and they're typically loaded with genetically modified organisms, the GMOs or GEs, and pesticides and other chemicals.
Well, it's hard to believe that people could lose track of being human beings, because what they do is they take advantage of the rest of us. And why? So they can make more money. Could they put real blueberries and other berries in a cereal? Of course they could. Why don't they? Because it's cheaper to make it, and they can still advertise the way that they want according to the laws of this country. So a little human evolution here is what's being called for. We need to do something that will help us to get back to what we're trying to achieve as people. You know, we should be dedicated to provide a service, something that's going to help us, rather than something that's going to cause our health to deteriorate. We don't really eat food anymore. We eat food products. And of course, the food products have lots of chemicals in them with long names. You don't even know what they are. If you have an ingredient list in a cellophane package, I say don't buy it. If it looks like a watermelon or a tomato or a zucchini, that's what you want. That's real food. And that's what we should be doing. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And I want to remind you that you can send your questions to us by tweeting us at PRN_radio, and we'll get back to you. It looks like we have a call from Harvey. Harvey, you there?
Hi, Dr. Len and Nurse Vicki. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
Great. Well, you know, I'd like to tell you what I've done, and I want your opinion on it. Well, I told you last time that I've given up the white rice. I still eat brown rice, white flour, refined flour, corn products, although I still eat organic corn on the cob, and sugar, both real and synthetic. But I was still feeling too acidic. I guess I drank coffee and all that. And I went to the Google, and I put in the words pH balanced foods, and these two lists came up of both acidic and alkaline foods, you know. And so I looked on the list, because I know what I eat, and I saw it all there. It's all on, just about all on the alkaline, with a touch of it's all there on the acidic with a touch of alkaline, like, you know, cheeses, meats, and so on and so forth. So what I've done is I've switched over. It says that it's better. The body prefers to be more alkaline, and it has to be both, but more alkaline. So what I've done is I got some spirulina, some natural spirulina. I put about a teaspoon of that into water, and it has no flavor, but I drink it down, and that really brings me into the alkaline. And the second thing I did was I remineralized my body. Because I was drinking water from these water machines, because the water out of the tap kind of has a smell, like a chemical smell, like chlorine. So I go to these water machines, but I think that takes the trace minerals out. So I've been remineralizing my body, and I feel great. I'm starting to feel really, really good by using the spirulina and moving my diet more over to the alkaline side of the diet. You know, more
That's
greens,
good.
More vegetables, and less acidic. So so basically that's what I've been doing. I just want to report positive results. And
yeah, well, you're on the right track too, Harvey.
Those are good ideas.
See, our body operates at a pH of 7.44. That's how narrow the pH is in the bloodstream. 7.44, and that's alkaline. Anything over pH 7.0 is alkaline, and anything under 7.0 is acid. And our diets are typically acidic, which means that it puts the stress on our kidneys and on our lungs, as well as on our all the enzymes and cellular systems that are working to keep us healthy, so that we don't work as well. If you have a chronic disease, it's especially important to pH balance. And all of my patients who have cancer, I'm always talking about an alkaline diet. But it's a good idea to serve your body the best you can with alkaline foods, you know, things like yams and onions and lentils that are wonderful, and stay away from meat and dairy because they're so acidic. And that chart that you got, Harvey, is a really good one to have. I think every household person who's cooking for the family or themselves should have that chart and should periodically measure their pH. And if their pH isn't between about 6.8 and 7.2, there's work that you could do to make your body be able to function, to process what you eat, and to do the metabolism to produce energy that we have much more efficiently. So you've raised a really good point. Thanks for calling, Harvey.
My pleasure. Thank you. I appreciate everything.
You have a great day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, speaking of water, you know, are we getting sick from our disinfected water byproducts?
Indeed.
You know, disinfecting water is a critical thing, but over 600 byproducts form when they do this, and it's pretty dangerous. And there's a study now that shows that there's a connection to neurological diseases like Alzheimer's and cancer and miscarriages and damaged DNA and, you know, from the byproducts of disinfecting the water, which we're trying to do to make it safe.
Yeah, well, it's important to have safe water. If we don't have safe water, I mean, we're going to have things like cholera, okay, and other forms of dysentery that are not just a small issue. These are big deals that are very important for us to pay attention to.
I remember when they first started putting the chloramines in the water and people were complaining that their fish were dying, you
As
know?
They should, yeah. I mean, that's not like a minor issue. If it kills a fish, I mean, what do you think it's doing to the rest of us? So when we look at water, it's not just something that is a minor issue. When you look at the fact that when we disinfect water, we make about 600 byproducts, as you were saying, that are very important in managing or in causing disease in people. So the real question is then, is what are we going to do to stop that? The EPA is supposed to be regulating the haloacetic acids, and those are things like iodoacetic, bromoacetic, and chloroacetic acids, because they cause problems, as you were saying, with difficulty with pregnancies. They can cause cancer and neurological problems. And one of the ways that these haloacetic acids work is they actually block the production of ATP in the body. They also can be carcinogenic by blocking apoptosis, which is the natural cell way that a cell ends its life normally. And it can change how DNA reflects its action on RNA and making certain kinds of proteins. So there's a lot that we can do to clean up our water
after it gets to our home. We want to thank the water company for putting chlorine in it or chloramine or whatever they're putting in it to kill the microbes, because that's absolutely vital. Otherwise, we'd be back to all these dysentery-like diseases like cholera that were killing millions of people around
this
the world.
That's why we get slow killers.
Slow. Well, yes, but you can filter the water at your own home.
Yes, and you know, too, people need to be aware or be reminded that medications and things like that that
they
you flush
the
down
too.
The toilet or that go down the sink.
Don't flush them.
Or, well, if you go to the bathroom and it comes out.
Well, that way you can't stop. But when you put your pills down there because you don't want them anymore, then it gets into the groundwater and it seeps into the reservoirs. And when you measure the amount of birth control pills or nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or antibiotics. They're loaded in there, and it's not like it's going to give you a pharmaceutical effect, but your body's going to know it's there, and it's going to interfere with metabolism.
Earlier we were talking about methicillin-resistant staph infections, and you know, some of these hand sanitizers also create resistance to the antibiotics and to the disinfectants.
There's a lot more.
Like some of them, like for example, triclosan, when it's mixed with chlorine, it actually causes chloroform.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more we could talk about this, but it's time for our break. So you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, or give us a tweet at PRN_radio, and we'll get back to you. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, or tweet us at PRN_radio, and we'll get back to you that way.
So we were talking about the byproducts in disinfected water, in other words, in our tap water. But, you know, it is a good idea, if you're not aware of it, that there are things that you can do to filter it out of your house.
So, absolutely.
So it's still disinfected. It's just that you're not going to be getting all these bad byproducts, and also, like what Harvey was talking about, our caller, it raises the alkalinity of the water also. And so,
well, if you use the right water system, it will do that. Most of yours won't, actually. So if you're just using a carbon filter, for example, that's the least expensive but reasonable way to get a lot of these products that are toxic out of it, including the chlorine, which is something that is a big issue. Because when you're taking a shower, that smell that you smell in there, if it's chlorine, is doing something to your lungs and the rest of your body that's not healthy for you.
Especially if you're using a soap or a shampoo that has triclosan in it, you're in a gas chamber of chloroform.
Oh, my gosh, it converts it to chloroform.
Yes, it does that.
All right.
So there are shower filters you can get. There are special drinking water filters that you can get. It's
right.
Also not a good idea to be drinking water out of plastic, and many of the plastic water bottles that you purchase, they have water in them that's tap water anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, when I see people on a hot summer day with these plastic containers, it sort of just makes me cringe a little bit, because I know that what they're doing is certainly not very healthy. So there are some water filters that I think are particularly good. I'll tell you about the one we use. It's one that actually splits the water into acid and alkaline fractions by hydrolysis. And so when you do that, the alkaline part is what you drink, and the acid part you can use to wash things like vegetables or whatever, because it's got the acidic stuff in it, and it's also got all the stuff that you don't want that you just wash down the drain. And then I like the idea of alkaline water, particularly if it's micro-clustered, meaning they're only small clusters of water. Because water molecules are polar, it means that they have an electrical charge, and they tend to form in groups of 2 to as much as 18 or 20 water molecules. And a cell is not just a sack full of water that's where these things go willy-nilly. Depending on the size of the water clusters, that water will go to certain places in the cell. And if you don't have those small clusters, it doesn't get there. So the water you get out of the tap is not healthy from an electromagnetic point of view either. So the filter that we use is one that both splits it into acid alkaline portions and makes micro-clustered alkaline water clusters so that it's really the best thing you could do. And then, of course, it takes out all the toxic things, which washes out in the acid side.
Okay. So if you get a water filter for the water that you drink, or you get a water filter for the shower, mm-hmm. shower head,
yeah.
that's a really good way to go and to
yeah, well, all these products that are made by disinfectants that are put in the water, and not even talk about the fluoride. I mean, there's so many things there that are important that we just kind of don't pay attention to.
Nobody has even done the studies, I don't think, about what happens when all these things are mixed together, all these chemical reactions and so forth.
You couldn't even begin to.
Yeah.
So the water we drink is absolutely critical that it be healthy. And a lot of studies need to be done about electromagnetics. You know, our bodies are made of 70% water or more when we're younger, and maybe it's down to a bit less as we get older. But the water there does amazingly important things from the point of view of electromagnetics. So make sure the water you're drinking is safe. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Spitter with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we might as well go ahead and do Vicki's tip at this time, because we just got about 50 seconds before that time.
An old guy told me the other day that in his next life he wants to live his life backwards.
What?
So he says you start out dead, you get that out of the way, then you wake up in an old people's home feeling better and better every day, and eventually you get kicked out for being too healthy. So you collect your pension when you start work, and you get a gold watch and a party on your first day. So you work for 40 years until someone with more experience replaces you. Then you go off to a party and you drink alcohol and generally be promiscuous, and now you're ready for high school. Well, you then go to primary school and you become a kid and you spend most of the day playing. You have no responsibilities, and eventually you become a baby until you're born. And then you spend your last 9 months floating in a luxurious spa-like condition.
Oh, give me a break.
With central heating and room service on tap.
Is that what you call that?
Larger quarters every day.
That's right.
And then, voila, you finish off your existence as an orgasm.
Yeah, we got things a little mixed up there.
Remember that movie with Brad Pitt, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button?
Yes.
He started out as an old man, but I don't think his ended up quite that way.
No, I think somebody's got quite an imagination, too. But that's pretty cool.
Anyway, laughter is the best medicine, and I got a kick out of that.
I did, too. That's great.
Share it.
All right. The number is 888-874-4888.
Our U.S. health care quality is still lagging. What happened to health care reform?
Nothing. There wasn't any health care reform. That was some kind of myth that people thought was going to be something that was real.
They gave us like a couple little things, like including your kids up until they were 26, but not much else. And over the last 5 years, access and affordability has
They got rid of rescission. That was a big deal. So that if you had breast cancer, for example, they would select you out and just tell you, they send you a letter and say your policy's been canceled for no good reason. Just do that, and then they say, go ahead, sue us if you want, but you're not getting any care from us. What a big deal that is. That should have been illegal before, probably was, but now at least they can't do that.
Okay, so that's good. So over the last 5 years, we have less access and less affordability, and the U.S. is even failing to keep up with other countries. I mean, we have more death rates that are preventable and premature.
Yeah, than any country, probably of all the industrialized countries, we're last.
If we were number one, we could that would mean we'd save about 91,000 lives. And now, right now, we have 81 million that are under and uninsured.
That's a conservative number. It's probably more like 120 million. I think there are very few people can afford health care, because it's just incredibly expensive. And we've got people out of work. I mean, they're losing their COBRA policies because they're also running out.
And the premiums are going up.
The insurance companies have never made more money than they're making today. So what have we gained, since the last World Health Organization rating of overall quality of health care is concerned? Well, we were 37th back in the year 2000. The answer is nothing. What we're doing is we're spending more money and we're throwing dollars at health care, but not because we're really so concerned about health care. We talk about like we're concerned about health care, But what we're really concerned about is sustaining the business of healthcare, because that's what this country is about, is economics. So it's a great economic stimulus package, and it makes a lot of money for people who are in the healthcare business, but it doesn't necessarily provide good healthcare for
people. It's not good for the people that need the healthcare business. Well, I mean, there's 40% of working adults that are in medical debt.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's the leading cause of bankruptcy in this country as well. And that should never be. I mean, all the rest of the countries in the world have something called universal health care, all the industrialized countries. And we're the only one that's sitting back and saying, oh, no, we can't do that. That's like doing communism or socialism. We can't do that. And yet, at the same time, we've got the most uninsured people. We've got people who are not getting health care for a lot of reasons. And even if they do, they may qualify for something called Medi-Cal or Medicaid, which is a pathetic system that's not responsive to our needs in a timely way, doesn't provide the best doctors, because who's going to take reimbursement on that? I remember one night I went to the hospital at 3 in the morning, spent an hour and a half with the patient, and got $3.47 for it.
Because it was Medi-Cal.
And a lot of what we're billing for, they said, we don't reimburse for this. So it's like, who's going to do that? And that's not that unusual. So our doctors are complaining they're not taking Medicaid and Medi-Cal patients for the most part. And the Medicare patients is a little different story. And had we given Medicare to everybody, that would have been a different system. I mean, the care that I got on Medicare and a supplemental was unbelievable in terms of quality of care. But then
you just had your hip replacement.
Well, yeah, but the bill the first time was $89,000, and I haven't even looked at the one for the second hip replacement that I had on the same joint, because the first one didn't work. I mean, the amount of money there is unbelievable, and I didn't pay a penny. And, of course, being a doctor, I could get all the tests I wanted on the spot. Do I want a PET CT scan, which I did? Yes. A bone scan or a white blood cell scan, because my case was a little bit complicated. I had those any time I wanted. I'd just call up and say, schedule me, please. And I'd say, when do you want to come in? And I'd come in the next day a lot of the time.
Yeah, but so what does a layperson do that needs those tests?
Well, they have to have a doctor who's really interested in their care and who will spend some time with them.
And that even knows that they need those tests,
well,
because your case was very unusual.
Mine was very complicated. I'm lucky to be alive as I look back at that right now. And you look at the other industrialized countries that have universal health care. They're not perfect. You want to get an MRI in Canada, you might have to wait 6 months for it or a year for it. And if you do, by that time, you may be dead.
So some of those people are coming here to get them?
Some of them are coming here and paying for it. So we don't have any health care systems in the world that I'm aware of that are based on wellness and prevention and nutrition and natural therapies, on lifestyle modification, which, of course, is what we need. And what the naturopaths are saying are absolutely vital if we're going to have a healthcare system that works. Otherwise, we wait till we get sick. Then we expect to go to our doctor, who we expect to provide some silver bullets that cost a fortune to try and bail us out of trouble. And it's like, well, had you ever thought of eating a healthy diet and exercising every day and reducing your stress levels and making sure you get 7 or 8 hours of sleep at night and weigh what you should and have a meaningful purpose in your life and not be exposed to toxic exposures? Has that ever crossed your mind? If it has, what do you do about it?
And then you can have a better quality of life.
Well, you won't get sick.
Like some people, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I don't want to live to be 90 years old anyway.
Well, if you're going to live in a hospital.
Yeah, but it's the quality of your life.
It's way better if you do the right things. I mean,
I had a cousin that lived to be 103. Well, the last 3 years weren't so great quality.
Well,
but
they weren't that bad.
She was still at home.
Still outside chasing deer. Are you kidding? Amazingly.
Well, not when she was 103. Maybe when she was 100, she was doing that.
Sorry, we had a neighbor that was playing tennis when she was 96 or 97.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you can do well. The system should give rewards for teaching wellness and prevention. We shouldn't be having a sick care system that's based on things like this.
Well, our health care system is pretty efficient. Inefficient, and it's got a lot of duplicates that are done and readmissions, hospital readmissions shortly after people are discharged from the hospital because they want to hurry up and get them out because mm-hmm. they don't want to pay for them. Then they have to end up readmitting them anyway.
Well,
and that
right.
doesn't say positive things for the system. They have really high administrative costs. I remember just like a week ago what was in the headlines of the newspaper about all the money that these CEOs of the hospitals were making. Some of those millions of dollars could have been used to help some of these people that are in medical debt, you know?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are not right. Our hospitals are built to make money, even if they're nonprofits. The nonprofits pay tremendous salaries and can do what they want with their money to call it an expense. So the whole system needs to be rethought. We talk about health care reform. We're not talking about health care reform. We're talking about minor insurance reform, and we're talking about changes in supporting the system the way it is.
Well, I think a really good place to start is to make sure that Congress would have the same kind of health insurance that the rest of us have to have.
Well, we couldn't,
because they have
enough.
Their own quote unquote special insurance.
I know.
So how does that motivate them to vote in our best interest?
Listen, our confidence in Congress has gotten down to public approval of around 10%. So 90% of America thinks they're corrupt, doing a very bad job and not representing them. And I'm one of those 90%. I'm totally convinced of that. And I think the next time we go to elections, I will vote no on every single incumbent and just vote for the new kid on the block, who at least for a few months may stay clean. Because when you get to Congress in Washington, D.C., you find out what you have to do to be able to get along with the good old boys. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Giselle in New York. Hi, Giselle.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, what's up?
Okay, you mentioned that we can take probiotics instead of the swine flu vaccine for the flu, and I'm wondering if you could be more specific about whether it's liquid or capsule or powder.
Yeah, sure.
Could you tell us also the name of the water purifier that you recommend?
You bet. Okay, let's start with the probiotics. First of all, these are not the normal capsules you buy in the drugstore. And I'll also have to tell you that this is my own theory. This is not something that's in the medical literature. But I know that when you take a regular probiotic to try and maintain good gut health, what it does is it crowds out the bad bacteria. So if you're carrying something, say, like C. diff or MRSA or some other darn thing in there you don't want, if you support the gut, that's a very good way to get rid of those carriers that you don't want. Now, in the case of trying to prevent the swine flu, you're talking about the respiratory tract, the nasal passages and the oral cavity, so it's the nasopharynx. And what I'm suggesting that we consider, so I'm not giving you advice here, I'm giving you information to mull over and hope that someone will actually do a study, is to make a probiotic that could be put into a mist and sprayed into the nose like a nose spray, maybe every morning at the time the flu season is here. So I haven't given you anything practical that I can back up with anything more than my imaginative mind, which is suggesting this. So what I would say is it's something you'd have to do on your own now. I actually would not recommend that you do it. I think we need to do the studies on that and hope that the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine will find some funds to do something like that. But you can bet your life they're not going to oppose the swine flu vaccine, because there's a whole conspiracy there that's horrible, that I think is criminal. And that's why I refer people to look at the article that I wrote that was published in the Townsend Letter, by the way, which is a medical journal for doctors and patients. I've got a 15-page article that's called The Infection Deception Part 1. And if you go to drsabuda.com, find that article there, have a look at it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So that's
okay.
That part. Now, for a water filter, actually, I don't remember the name of the one that we have, but I can tell you a resource that you could go to that you'll get good information. We have a person on our staff. Her name is Beverly Rubik, and her email address is, you can write this down if you want, is brubik@earthlink.net. And she's an expert who will be happy.
She's a biophysicist.
Yeah, she has a PhD in biophysics from UC Berkeley. She's published 80 scientific papers. I work with her regularly in my office. She's part of our staff. And she will educate you about the water filtration systems there are. There are many of them. And help find one that fits your budget. So that's what I would do for that, Giselle.
So
does that answer your question?
Can you spell the website again slowly?
Sure. It's B as in Beverly, R-U-B-I-K, at earthlink.net.
And that's not a website. That's just her email.
That's her email address, and that'll get you to her, and she'll give you the information that you want. And anybody who wants to call, she'd appreciate the business, and she knows a lot. I trust her. We use her products ourselves.
And if you want to read that article about the infection deception, that's on drsaputo.com, and that's S-A-P-U-T-O.
And if you want more information on Beverly Rubik, a PhD, you can get that either with a Google search, or you can go to the website at drsaputo.com and put her name in there, and you'll see all the myriad of videos and audios that we have on Beverly that talk about her work. So, Giselle, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuna with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And remember, you can also tweet us with questions at PRN_radio.
You know, there was a government-backed expert panel that joined in the fight against skin cancer. Basically, where they were starting was a ban on tanning booths. There's a strong link between UV radiation and skin cancer. And they found in counseling with the teens that they told them that if they got too much sun and they were staying in these tanning booths, that they were going to get wrinkles rather than focusing on the skin cancer because the kids are so into
how
you
they
know,
look.
Their, the, yeah, how
they don't
look
good, they get real upset.
Which is why they're doing it in the first place, because they want to get tan.
Right. If you tell them they're going to look bad in 20 years, it's like, well, talk to me in 20 years when I look bad, and then I'll listen.
Yeah. Well, the American Cancer Society has some expressions that I just kind of wanted to share because they're kind of fun. They go slip, slop, slap, and wrap, which
means
you're going to be in the sun to slip on a shirt and slap on some sunscreen and slap on a hat and wrap on some sunglasses. But there's no mention of the types of sunscreen. And
that's a big deal.
SPFs over like 30 or 50
are just a gimmick.
They're just a marketing gimmick.
Right. So you don't need bullfrog. You don't need a 95% SPF factor.
And speaking of the B, the SPFs that are in commercial sunscreens really just protect you from the UVB rays, which are the burning ones. So they're not really preventing you from and screening you from getting skin cancer.
Right.
And think about how people keep reapplying them, and the sun actually can make some of them inactive. And they're very dangerous to wear with insecticides, like in the summertime when people are slapping them on. And the nanoparticles are in many of those, and they can cross the blood-brain barrier and get into your organs and so forth. And you can learn a lot more about all this if you're interested at drsaputo.com if you go to Vicki's Corner and put in sunscreen.
Vicki is a world-class expert on skincare products and healthy cosmetics and household cleaning agents. And she has a lot of information on the site at drsaputo.com that's free, that you can learn about what you can and can't use that's safe. And if you follow those guidelines, you'll do a lot. The amount of toxicity that's found in skincare products is unbelievable. And particularly when you're looking at sunscreens and lipsticks and moisturizers and all these things that we think are important. If you're buying the common brands out there, you're buying brands that are toxic that will poison you.
I think one of the reasons that we have such an epidemic now of vitamin D deficiency is because everybody's slopping on all this.
They're slipping and slopping and slapping and wrapping.
All these commercial sunscreens that protect only from burns, but they block the vitamin D. And the chemical sunscreens, what they do is they absorb the UV rays and then they create free radicals. And the natural sunscreens that mostly have like the zinc oxide in them and other ingredients of different oils and so forth, so that they don't go on looking real white like what the lifeguards used to look like. But they reflect and they scatter those rays. They protect you from both the UVA and the UVB. And I have some suggestions of that also on drsaputo.com. But the UVA rays are the aging ones, and they're the ones that lead to squamous cell and basal cell carcinomas. So you want to look for full-spectrum sunscreens. That means that they cover both the A and the B UV rays. And they also mentioned in this particular article about melanoma that 1 in 50 get it. And they were trying to say that people get it from the sun and they can get it from these tanning booths. But, you know, a lot of people get melanoma on their trunks, which isn't even exposed to the sun.
The most common place you get it is non-sun-exposed places.
Yeah, or even on the bottom of people's feet. So it's something to just kind of look for anyway to make sure you don't have anything that looks weird.
I think you want to be sensible about sun exposure. Get in it because you need it, but don't get burned by it because that's what causes the cancers to form. You definitely need to have vitamin D, and the problem is we have an epidemic of vitamin D deficiency because we live our lives where? Inside. When do you get out between 10 and 2, which is the only time that UVB rays are really there? And in the wintertime, if you live in a latitude like New York, you're not going to be in a place where you're going to get very much in the way of vitamin D, so you almost have to supplement or eat foods that are high in vitamin D, of which there aren't many.
Like fish.
Yeah. So the vitamin D is a huge issue.
And so is skin cancer. And 3.5 million skin cancers out of 2 million people means that
people are getting more than one skin cancer. Almost two. Yeah, that's right.
So we're not saying you don't need to protect yourself. You do need to protect yourself, but you also need to get out in the sun for at least those 20 minutes a day if you're fair-skinned. If you're dark-skinned, you need to get more than that. Some people say two or three times as much.
Maybe 45 minutes if you're
But in 20 minutes between 10 and 2, you're most likely not going to get burned, so I don't think you really have to worry about that. And if you're going to be in the sun longer than that, that's when to slip, slop, slap, and wrap. So after you've been out in the sun, you need to not wash it off.
Yeah, right. Well, we're running out of time. So we want to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and to take your health questions every Monday afternoon on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and DrSaputo.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time. They'll also be archived 24/7 on DrSaputo.com.
Remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe, so if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a great week. Thanks for hanging out with us.